Hello and welcome to The Fergan. My name is Dan and I'm here to try and make sense of these turbulent times from a heathen perspective. Visit fergan.com for links, information and an archive of past episodes. Welcome one and all to The Fergan, and this episode is a little bit of a self-indulgent one, really. It's one that I've been planning to do since the very beginning, and that's to those of you who listen to my episode on pagan music will know that black metal is a real passion of mine, and some of you may know that I have a history of playing black metal myself, and I was a member of the band Winterfillith for several years, and this some good friends of mine who are equally passionate about the genre, and we've been planning a discussion on this for quite a while now. So I'm joined by Hwitjard, who many of you will remember from episode, I think it was episode 11 we did, Folkish Religion with Hwitjard, and he's a good and long-standing friend of mine who has a background in heavy metal, in black metal, and a real passion for the genre as well. So, Hwitjard, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing this. I mean, we've been privately chatting about all kinds of, well, we're always discussing black metal and the kind of, well, to be frank, the ridiculousness of the most of the current black metal scene. So, yeah despite that, we do have a very long-standing passion, and I know Hwitjard does. He's very knowledgeable about the genre, both from a listener and a composer point of view. So, we are also joined by a mutual friend of ours, also a good and long-standing friend called Glomor. Glomor is it has a black metal project called Pale Mist, which some of you may have heard of. So, Glomor, this is your first time joining us on the Fergan podcast, and it's good to have you here. How are you this evening?
Yeah, it's absolutely a pleasure to be here. Yeah, been following the podcast from the start, so yeah, real honour to be on the podcast now. And yeah, I'm feeling good. Very motivated and very hyped for this conversation. Been looking forward to it.
Excellent. Yeah. While we're here, and this is something that I want to know, and I guess a few listeners might want to know, Glomor, your name that you use as your so-called stage name, where did that come from? What's the origin of that?
It's a complete play of words. I can remember, like, when I was in my late teens, like 18, 19 years old, like, you know, we had to have a pseudonym. So rather than just, like, you know, flicking through like some occult literature and just trying to find like some name and like go with that, I just sort of, like, what I did, I sort of mashed a couple of words together. So it's a mashup between the words gloom and horns, and like gloom is in dark and miserable, and then the horns is in like the horn beast, get Mendes or whatever, and sort of like mashed them together and got Glomor. And at the time I thought I'd been creative then, and I've sort of been stuck with that since I've started the project 15 years ago. So yeah, that's where it comes from. Not the most interesting story, but
I mean, that's really not too bad. There are definitely far worse names out there. I mean, I kind of like it myself. I've recently joined a new black metal project, an existing black metal project, and I won't name it because it hasn't been officially announced yet. But for the purpose of the project, I was given the option of choosing a stage name. And I've never really gone by a stage name before. I've always just gone under my real name. Although I did have a black metal project where I made an album in 2007 under the name Spearling. And for that project, I went by the name Blade, which is an old Brythonic word meaning wolf. So, but I mean, that never stuck or anything. I was never kind of, I was never really known. I mean, to be honest, very few people know about that project, Spieling, anyway. So, there are some really kind of cringeworthy names out there. So I think Glomor is pretty good.
Thank you.
So we've got some notes of things to discuss here. And I think a little bit later on, we'll talk specifically about Glomor's project, Pale Mist, because it's a really good black metal project with some pretty in-depth philosophies. And it's also a project where on the latest album, I contributed some guest vocals. So we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But to start things off, we're just going to talk kind of freely about our relationship with the genre of music, black metal. Now, black metal is something I imagine that many of you listening will be familiar with it. Some of you will be big fans of it, like we are. But many of you will either be in the camp which dislikes it, flat out dislikes it, because it is quite an abrasive form of music to the kind of untrained ear. Or you may not know anything about it whatsoever. You may just know a little bit about the drama that surrounded the Norwegian scene of the 1990s, the church burnings, the murders, things like that. So I wanted to start off by just kind of giving those of you who are not particularly au fait with black metal a chance to understand why we find it so fascinating. So I'm just going to ask Hvitjard and Glomor in turn, what is it that first, so I'll start with Hvitjard, what is it that first drew you to black metal? What got you hooked and what kept you hooked? What is it that keeps you coming back to it, which keeps that kind of flame of passion alive for the genre? What is it that you see in it, which you don't see in other forms of music, and which is perhaps something which people wouldn't understand initially? Maybe they wouldn't understand why you love it so much, but what would you say to them? What is it that drew you to it? And then what is it that you would say to someone who doesn't really understand it?
I see it as a genre of music, which isn't just heavy metal. It seems to be almost like heavy metal in its structure, but not in its purpose. It seems to function in a way like non-metal genres. It seems to be able to be quite flexible and to adapt to other genres. So it's almost like metal that functions like classical music, or it can function like folk music. It can function like ambience. It can function as a soundtrack. It's a genre which offers a kind of an atmosphere of darkness, but not in a way which is sort of not in a cringy way of darkness, but it seems to create a very sort of murky and obscure world that you can escape into.
It's a visceral darkness, isn't it? It's not kind of lip service. It's not just for show. It's a very visceral kind of atmospheric darkness, isn't it?
Yeah, and that darkness can take on many different forms, even in a very beautiful way. So it needn't be very abrasive. It needn't be necessarily evil in any sort of way. But I'm sure we'll get into that topic later. But it seems to it has a darkness that can be very beautiful, almost like it reflects a particular, as I said, an atmosphere, but also reflects a particular landscape as well. Like you can see black metal reflecting a beautiful landscape of ancient forests, of mountains, of the twilight of the sky, of the moon during winter. All these sort of descriptions, which at this point have become quite a cliche, but it seems quite evocative of a very transcendent world that you can immerse yourself into. It takes you out of the material world, takes you out of the mundane issues, and it becomes something beyond the world that you can turn towards and immerse yourself into. And that's not something that you get with a lot of standard heavy metal. With heavy metal, it's generally something you can rock out to and headbang to, and at the end of the day, just turn it off after having a good time. But with black metal, it's something that leaves a lasting impression with you. It becomes something that you feel really stirs your soul, that really brings something out of you. And it's a very, very evocative in being able to connect with you in that way. It's like you find something within the music, and the music brings something out of you as well. And trying to find that kind of purpose in music is it takes a while if your entry point is just standard heavy metal. And that's why when I first got into black metal, it was a discovery of what I was looking for, not just in terms of metal, but in terms of music in general. It kind of connected various dots of and various strands of genres I'd enjoy and listen to here and there, film soundtracks and things like that. But it connected all these strands together, and then I realised that there was a common theme of what I was searching for in music, which was that particular atmosphere and darkness and that world that I could immerse myself into. And that's sort of seemed to go not just with black metal, but it could be soundtracks, it could be folk music, it could be ambience, it could be classical music, and all these genres seem to have that common theme of the atmosphere, the ambience, the feel, how evocative it is of a particular environment and soundscape, and a sort of an aural landscape as well.
Yeah, so, no, I completely agree with all of that.
It seems to be the genre that made me realise what I wanted out of music in general.
Yeah, and I fully agree with all of that. You pretty much echo most of my thoughts on it there. And Glomor, what about yourself? What is it that really drew you to it and kept you with it and keeps you inspired by it? I know that your relationship to black metal is changing at this current time, but I know that you will remain a fan of the classic records particularly. So what is it that really drew you to it?
Yeah, similar really. I mean, when I first discovered black metal, it really felt like something else. I mean, yeah, we'd be listening to metal, we listened to really shouty music, heavy shouty music. But when you listen to black metal, what really shook me about it was the fact, the ideological facts of it. These are done by Satanists, these people that burn churches and all this sort of stuff in real life. And, this really drew me to it. It's just fascinating me. Like, wow, people are actually doing this sort of thing. And the more I, started to listen to it, started to delve into it, it's, as Shukyard basically perfectly put, it's just felt like a very sort of like transcendental style of music, like really like out of this world. It really sort of like opens your mind, opens your eyes, and it's sort of like the more I was listening to it, the more bands I was discovering, it just felt like I was growing, I was transcending, I was like growing outside myself from that sort of like a mundane person that I was before. So the more I started discovering bands and listening to it, it just felt like, it was just like the gift that just kept on giving. The individuals involved in black metal, for me as a young teenager, was really people I strongly idolized, not just for the music they make, because that's the point of black metal. It's very much more than just music. It's there's so much more that surrounds it than just basic heavy metal. Over the years, it's you start off by discovering the usual bands, and you start buying CDs and vinyls and whatever, and then you start going to concerts, and then you start growing like a little group and of like-minded people, and it's sort of like helps you. It just sort of puts you on that path. It led me to water, so to speak. So this is why it's basically I've stuck to it all these years, because it's just like I said, it's like the gift that I've just kept on giving. Even not so much today, but we can get to that later. But even now, I mean, like when I listen to all the early '90s records, it still blows my mind, and it still makes the hairs at the back of my neck stand up. It's a great motivational boost just to stick on an album like in the Knights of the Eclipse or the Shadow Throne. it really does give you that boost you need. It's it's just like endless inspiration. It's I don't think there'll ever be a time in my life where I will stop listening to black metal, because I think I've connected it to the point where I understand it. I know what I can get out of this, and it'll always be a problem to my life one way or another.
Yeah, it's again, I echo your thoughts on that. I mean, thinking back to when I was first introduced to it, I think probably the first album I was introduced to was In the Night Side Eclipse by Emperor, and and then it was albums like Eld by Enslaved, Heavisly Set Taros by Burzum. Those were kind of the Mistress Dom Satanas by Mayhem. Those were the real kind of classic albums, which were just steeped in this as Whityard said, this very murky, dark atmosphere. And black metal, for those of you who are not familiar, I would say to you that black metal is an extremely unique genre, because not only does it have the kind of dramas that went alongside it, you had Varg Vikernes, who murdered Euronymous from Mayhem, you had the church burnings committed by various members of the Norwegian scene, you had lots of kind of early NSBM, so-called extremists who made names for themselves in the early days. There was this real kind of, as a teenager, looking for something exciting, you stumble across black metal and you've hit the jackpot, because you've got this completely alien form of music, and it's coupled with these extreme actions of the individuals involved with it. It's like kind of the 70s punk scene on steroids. So, and from that point of view, you could almost accuse black metal of being kind of sensationalist or something. But then when you start to really explore the music and you find this kind of very abrasive but very atmospheric form of music which breaks all of the musical rules. There's no verse chorus, there are no sticking to the same tempo throughout the song, there are no concerns about notes clashing or staying within certain musical modes or anything like that. Various of the guitarists, particularly in the black metal scene, and the drummers, it has to be said, and vocalists, actually, all of the different instruments that go into black metal. You have guys like Snorre Rook from Thorns, who basically invented a whole new guitar playing style. You have the tremolo picking, you have like the kind of chromatic scale that's commonly used, you have the use of only minor chords, things like that, and it creates this very, very eerie kind of unfamiliar sound which just captures your imagination. And you start to listen to these albums, and you're looking at the cover art, and it's depicting moonlit forests and like hidden castles and orcs and themes from Tolkien's work and things like that. And it's just this very kind of escapist. It's like the musical form of discovering fantasy literature for the first time, where all the rules have been broken and suddenly anything, almost anything goes from a musical point of view. This very bold kind of rejection of societal norms and what music expects from you and things. So, I named a couple of albums there which were my kind of first foray into black metal. So, Enwyd, what were the first kind of albums that you fell in love with?
Well, again, it was the Norwegian band. So, although my first Emperor that I listened to was the reissue of the Wrath of the Siren Emperor demos. But as well as that, it was Satyricon's Dark Medieval Times, Enslaved's Frost, Mayhem's Demeter Santa Thanas. What else? Burzum, of course, as well. It was, after I get into these sort of bands, there was a very interesting thing of just how many bands there were around, and just going down a very rapid rabbit hole, trying to discover new bands everywhere you went. And it's like, it always felt like a sort of, like a strange collector mentality, always trying to find new bands as much as you could, always trying to find demos. and some of the earliest cases of that. When I was quite young, I was too young for a debit card or anything like that. So making online purchases, I couldn't pay online. But I found a few record labels, and instead I'd send concealed cash in the post, and that was a good memory of the golden days of being able to do that. So I'd have a look through this list, and there was no sort of try before you buy or listen before you buy.
No.
There was just like a sort of a vague list of having to go off the album titles. And if it had things like medieval darkness and things like that in the title, I'd be like, "Ooh, that sounds really interesting. That sounds like the sort of thing I've heard. I'd be after."
You pretty much like you'd very often choose which records to buy based on the cover art or the band names.
Exactly.
That's why I think still to this day, particularly in the genre of black metal, it's incredibly important to have good cover, or not necessarily good in like a kind of standard conventional sense, but very evocative cover art and, you know, a well-chosen name and a good logo and things like that, because those are the first port of call for people discovering your music still to this day, I think. I mean, when I discover stuff these days on Bandcamp, you know, and I'm scrolling through people's recommendations and things, I still will, more often than not, will base whether I'm going to check an album out on the cover art and things like that. And yeah, I mean, I used to mail order stuff through a mail order called Supernal Music, and I'm sure both of you guys will remember that too. And Supernal Music was run by a guy called Alex Kurtajic, who I think that's how you pronounce it, but he's made quite a name for himself in the kind of, I guess you could say, traditionalist or white nationalist scene. He's given speeches at conferences, he's written books on the subject. He's translated, I believe, certain texts. I think he's translated some stuff by Miguel Serrano and things like that. He's a very interesting guy. But yeah, for those of you who don't know, you may have even heard of Alex, but you won't have heard, you may not know that he used to run one of the best underground black metal distros in the UK.
And he was an artist as well for cover art, including Dimmu Borgir's The Stormblast.
There was, that's right.
A Covenant album cover as well. The second reissue of Tormentor's Anno Domini.
Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, it's and those were the days when, you know, this was just kind of before the internet, really. So certainly before the era where you could sample music online. So you'd phone Alex Kurtajic up at Supernal Music, and you'd say, "I'm really into this album and this album. What else do you recommend?" And there was actually one time where this was, I think, possibly just before the 2008 financial crisis. He actually ran a deal, I remember, where you could pay for CDs using gold. So you could send him like a gold sovereign or a half sovereign, and in return you could choose like 10 CDs or something like that. And I actually went in for this deal. I went to a gold bullion dealer. I bought myself a sovereign. I sent it, recorded delivery to Alex at Supernal, and then chose 10 CDs because it, you know, at the time it meant that each CD worked out to about £5 instead of paying, you know, £10. So you're getting your CDs about half price. So yeah, really like, you know, kind of magical times, really. But Glomor, did you have any experience with Supernal, and, you know, what were the first records that you really fell in love with? You know, did you buy any of them from Supernal?
Well, I mean, Supernal were the first distro I started ordering from that was a Plastikhead. or getting on the bus to the next city to get HMV or Virgin Megastore. Yeah, I actually remember vividly my very first purchase from Supernal, and that was a Horner album. And because, yeah, that sort of led me to the next level. Because obviously, when you first get into black metal, yeah, you're getting into your Satyricon, into Dimmu Borgir, you're Enslaved, and then you sort of discover the underground, so to speak. And Supernal were brilliant for that. It was just like, yeah, really, I mean, it was really good service. Like, you order a CD in the morning and it'll be on your doormat the next day, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It was good times ordering from Supernal. I started ordering from them when I was still bloody a college student, and all the money I'll earn working weekends will go straight to him. So, yeah. But yeah, favorite albums. Well, it's actually, speaking of Superno, it's actually Dimmu Borgir's Stormblast. I would say that was probably the first real black metal album I ever purchased. I mean, before that, I was into pretty much everything I had was just Cradle of Filth. I mean, they were like sort of the gateway band, so to speak. So yeah, that album, even though I didn't really understand it very much at the time, because it's quite mellow and quite soft in comparison to a lot of, like, you know, the stuff I just listened to before. But what kept me captivated was the atmosphere on that album. It's just absolutely, even today, I still listen to that album quite regularly, and it still blows my mind, blows me away. So yeah, definitely that album. Also, the early Darkthrone albums, and there's another one I can't remember what it is. Satyricon and that I got into a bit later. Oh yeah, sorry, I was going to say Emperor's Anthems of the Welcome at Dusk. I actually remember I got that as a Christmas present on Christmas 2002. And yeah, that was basically my Christmas day that year. Just listened to that album on repeat. So yeah, very fond memories. It's just magical time.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know about you guys, but more than any other genre, the listening experiences in the kind of early days of listening to black metal are very much tied to certain times and places. They're so evocative of memories of certain places. You know, you mentioned like listening to black metal albums on Christmas Day all day. And I remember traveling to Holland to visit family for Christmas one year, after I'd just discovered Storm of the Lightsbane by Dissection. And sitting in the back of the car the entire journey from England to Holland, pretty much listening to that album on repeat. And you know, it was quite a snowy winter that year, back when we used to get snow regularly at that time of year. And I remember that vividly, you know, sitting in the back of the car. You know, I was probably about 15-16 years old, something like that, and just being absolutely obsessed with every single note that was flowing into my ears. You know, the kind of icy atmosphere of that, the key changes, the tempo changes, the way that the songs were structured, the passion with which it was delivered, the extremity of it. It was just, I mean, again, that's an album that sticks with me to this day. I also told the story in my Pagan Music podcast about how I visited two of my cousins are half German. They grew up in Germany, and we visited them one year. And one winter, we climbed a nearby mountain called the Grosser Feldberg near Frankfurt. And even though it wasn't until many years later that I heard Wisely Set Tyros by Burzum, when I did hear the song Tom Het, the last song on that album, it just transported me, like, you know, literally like a teleporter, straight back to that mountain. And to this day, I still associate the two things, even though I wasn't even listening to the music at the time that I went up that mountain, because I'd probably only been about 10 years old at the time. So yeah, it's there's a real kind of magical spell that black metal has the ability to weave over you. And I think that is the kind of common ground on which we all come to it. It's this kind of mystical nature of it, this addictive kind of otherworldliness that it has. Would you both agree with that?
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing quite like it, you know, finding your, a beautiful nature spot that's sentimental to you. Then at the same time, in your headphones, you're blasting away your a very sentimental black metal album at the same time. So that those two things combined is just, yeah, it's still something I do regularly to this day, because it just feels so liberating, you know. It's very powerful.
Yeah. In fact, that's something that's a lot difficult to have these days, when a lot of music's just very transitory. You can download the music online, put it onto an MP3 player and go away with it, and then not really take it in, I guess, like one quick listen, and then because
market. That's such a good point. I mean, when I remember, and I don't know if this is specifically because of the genre, I think this goes for all genres, but you know, when I was that age, I had a cassette player, and I'd take it out with me. I'd get the train to visit friends or get the train to school or whatever. And I'd have like four cassettes in my bag tops with maybe, if I was lucky, I could fit 8 albums, and they would literally stay there for 6 months. Those were the only kind of 8 albums I would listen to for 6 months, and they were just, and I would never get bored of them. I knew every moment of each of those albums intimately, and you don't get that these days. I mean, even to the best of my abilities, because of my character, I can't help the need to want to just discover new music. So even if I bought an album 2 weeks ago, which I absolutely love, rather than listening to that to death, listening to that 30 times like I would have done in my teens, you know, I can't help but go and seek something new that might be just as good. Or, you know, there's always this kind of quest for something new and magical. But back then, I think a lot of people, you know, but both of you guys and a lot of people listening can probably remember that experience of listening an album to absolute death and being incredibly intimate with every moment of it.
Yeah. Especially when a lot of the experience of listening to it, it's not just the sound. There's many albums, but you can recall particular, you can recall the lyrics of the album as you're reading through it while listening to it. You can recall certain memories you had, certain feelings you had on your first listen, and also the colour of the artwork as well. Just like all the senses seem to really mix into that that really immersive experience of listening to it. So it's not just listening to sound, but you get so many rich memories about it. Like one of my favorite releases, I think a bit that came out in 2004, so quite newish, but it was a French band, Death Spell Amiga, and they had an EP called Kenos, which is a Greek word in theology. And the artwork of Kenos had this sort of very burgundy style colour, and lots of very abstract art, in a very French style.
Mm.
And just like listening to it, the sound seems to bring back that burgundy colour, seems to bring back the artwork. It's like all those parts really become part of that experience. It's not just sound, it's the colors, it's the memories, it's the smells, it's everything about it.
Yeah, completely. So I wanted to move on to just one of the kind of you know, those who would try to detract from black metal, they'll say black metal is degenerate because it's about Satanism, and you know, unfortunately, you do find a lot of the early bands and even some of the current bands who will say that black metal has to be satanic to be black metal, that is a prerequisite for it. There's a lot that we could say about this, and you know, I'm sure both of you have got some great thoughts to share on this, but I would just say, firstly, I'd like to read out a section from an interview that Satir from Satyricon did in the 90s. I think this probably would have been around 94 or something like that. And he says, I hate every other fucking culture, and especially when they are brought to Norway by people who I would prefer stayed some other place than our true paganistic country. So in just that one kind of explosive sentence there, you've got a declaration from one of the pioneers of the second wave of black metal, of Norwegian black metal, Satyr, who's declaring that not only is black metal pagan, but it's nationalistic. And this is a sentiment that's quite often echoed. You know, you have bands like Ulver, who never dabbled with Satanism in any way, and always went for that more kind of Nordic mysticism, folklore, paganism. You obviously have Enslaved, who their lyrical themes were always centered around Viking exploits, and then I think a bit later on the kind of runic esotericism. Obviously, you have bands like Mayhem, who were, you know, kind of openly satanic, or you know, they used satanic tropes in their music. Gorgoroth as well. You have the originator, Venom, of course, you know, declaring that black metal is Satanism. But really, most of the particularly most of the Norwegian and Swedish bands, you know, latter Bathory, Cawthon from Bathory switched Bathory from being focused on Satan to being focused on Viking Northern European mythology. And then most of the Norwegian bands were, if when they did say that they were satanic, it was more in a kind of a Nietzschean sense. I would say that it was more about this kind of elitist kind of the empowerment of the eye, like the will to power, this kind of it was more kind of said in an anti-Christian, anti-social way, rather than an actual belief in, you know, the Hebraic entity known as Satan. So yeah, I'd like to ask both of you your thoughts on that. What would you say to people who accuse black metal of being intrinsically satanic? Whityard?
Well, black metal is intrinsically, it's a very adversarial kind of music.
Yeah.
And when you're very much trapped in the Judeo-Christian paradigm, being adversarial from that, the only path that a lot of people have to turn to is towards Satanism. And it's very difficult to really get off that paradigm and think of things in any other way.
It's very youthful, isn't it? It's a very youthful kind of trap to fall into. And you can kind of understand these guys from, you know, Christian Norway, who were mostly in their mid to late teens when they started these bands and kind of set the tone for what they were going to do. It's kind of like how when I first found my voice of dissent or my thoughts of dissent in my youth, the first thing I came across was the Communist Manifesto. And you think that you're being anti-establishment and edgy by being a communist. And I think it's kind of the same thing in a spiritual sense. You think you're being edgy and anti, you know, establishment by being satanic. And I think that's where a lot of these guys, you know, are coming from.
Yeah, it's a very sort of... if you're trapped in a particular paradigm, like whether it's in a Christianity, the only way that you can be opposed to Christianity is to be satanic as far as the rules in Christianity is concerned. And it's the same in politics. If you're opposed to the rich and powerful and being exploited by powerful elites, then for most people, their only pathway out of that is to be a leftist. Because as far as playing the rules of the game is concerned, that's the opposite. It's like there's no sort of third position. There's no way to get outside the left-right structure. And it's the same with Christianity. It's there's no way to get out and be Christian of the God versus Satan paradigm. But once you kind of break that particular spell and manage to step outside of it, then you can kind of explore something a lot more meaningful. And it's all fine and well to be anti-Christian and be anti-something, but you need a positive message to put in its place. And often a lot of bands don't tend to reach that level of maturity.
Yeah, but I think that's what kind of crept in as these bands matured, wasn't it? They started to find that positive attachment, that like thing to aspire to rather than the thing to reject. And actually you made me think of something there. That's a really good point when you said that, you know, Satanism is kind of infantile in the same way that communism is infantile, you know, to the kind of young radical mind. And maybe therein we have the answer as to why, you know, and this is a subject we'll get into a little bit later on, but therein is why we have the answer as to why in these current times we're starting to see a crop of so-called red and anarchist black metal bands crop up, anti-fascist black metal bands. They are generally people who are new to the genre and in their kind of infantile understanding of being edgy and revolutionary, whereas the, you know, young Norwegians of the 90s would have turned to Satan. These days the big bogeyman is fascism and conservatism, so they think to be edgy you need to be essentially communist or anti-fascist or whatever, and it just betrays a complete lack of understanding of how the world really works. But anyway, I don't want to kind of get onto that tangent, but Glomor, what say you to those who would accuse black metal of being degenerate or satanic?
Obviously to the sort of normal person, well, nationalists of today or whatever, they hear the word Satan, they instantly just think of some idiocy, degeneracy and whatever. But yeah, I mean, as you already pointed out, I mean, you'll find that a lot of the bands from, say, the early 90s, especially the Polish black circle, with bands like Velas and Invernum, they sort of saw Satan really as a more of a philosophical-based thing, almost like a pagan-based thing. And they sort of saw, like, you know, their dark god that led them against the false light, so to speak. So, I mean, when we're talking about bands that literally, especially today, that are saying that they are satanic, it really doesn't merit much anyway. I mean, like, even like us, Ray, can probably see it as a bit of a joke. I mean, like, if you were to say, for example, ask 10 different satanic bands what Satanism is, you get 10 different answers. And on top of that, you won't get much of an answer anyway, because they don't really know themselves. They're quite lost. So, I mean, it's like, I think this the whole satanic thing is like, it's like really, I think with the younger generations, like the early 90s and us when we were young, it really was like the prominent countercultural thing, which sort of like, you know, the edginess of it. Like you said, like if we had discovered communism instead, who knows what sort of path could have gone down. But I mean, you know, I mean, I can remember back in the early 2000s, it's like wearing something like an inverted cross could have put you in danger. You know what I mean? So, I think that, to answer the question, probably, it's like, obviously, you've got to sort of dig a bit deeper than just the face value of the symbology and the message of the bands that that use Satan a lot in their lyrics. That really is, when in the grand scheme of things, in the bigger scale of things, it's sort of like, you know, scratching the surface, like it was a satiric one. I mean it's even with like the early Demi Vergara interviews as well, there was similar sort of answers. There is one interview expert with Shagraph back in the early 90s where he says something quite similar. So yeah, I mean, that's,
it's antagonistic, yeah. Isn't it? It's antagonistic, yeah. To just be, you know, and I think, yeah, like I said, I think most of the, particularly the quality acts that came out of the 90s, they quickly kind of evolved into something beyond Satanism. You know, they either went for this more kind of Nietzschean take on kind of Satanism. They almost tried to, you know, bands like Emperor, you know, the essence of the eye and things like that, this very kind of Nietzschean will to power kind of elitist left-hand path thing, rather than, you know, straight up Satanism. You know, this, which, you know, you could almost tie into kind of Julius Evola's worldview, which, you know, I think we'll probably touch on a little bit when we talk about Pale Mist, possibly. But and then you have bands like Burzum. I mean, Varg from Burzum. And by the way, those of you who don't know, I had a working relationship with Varg. I mean, my day job is I'm a graphic designer, and I still get a lot of stick to it for it to this day. You know, there's a small clique of people on Twitter who cannot get over the fact that I worked with Varg Vikernes, and they think that you know, that they think they know everything about what my views are because of that. What's that, mate?
Apparently, it makes you sketch.
Sketch, yeah, that's their favorite word to use, sketch. And it's it makes me cringe every time I hear that. You know, just imagine some kind of, you know, short-haired, bearded kind of hipster type wearing a flannel shirt who thinks that they're a voice of authority on black metal, calling bands sketch because they don't conform to their red and anarchist, you know, and it's complete revisionism. You know, they really genuinely think that black metal should be anti-fascist by its very nature. Evidently, they know nothing about the early views and lyrics and interview answers that bands like Dark Throne and Satyricon and others of the kind of prominent bands gave in those early days. Unfortunately, most of those individuals have been muted in the current age, and they've kind of toned down their kind of sensationalist rhetoric. The obvious exception to that being Varg Vikernes, who, you know, I will always, no matter what disagreements I have with him ideologically over certain things, I will always admire and respect him for being honest and for never betraying the convictions that he stood by all of these years, you know. So, yeah, I know people have different thoughts on Varg Vikernes, and there are certainly things that you can criticize, but he's made some of the most profoundly important black metal albums of all time. and he's never betrayed his philosophical worldview like some of the others have. And then you've got guys like Jon Nodvate from Dissection, who was satanic in a real practical, visceral way, to the extent where he actually committed suicide in a satanic ritual. These guys, they matured beyond their kind of original satanic flirtations, if that is indeed what they had. And you know, any of the bands of worth, they either went into a more kind of philosophical Nietzschean thing, or they went into a pagan worldview. And that is, you know, you have some excellent bands these days who take on the more kind of pagan aspects of black metal. But yeah, what would you guys say are some of the bands who you think have matured well, who have kind of who were part of those that early era, who rode out that kind of that youthful kind of attraction to Satanism in a kind of dignified manner? You know, are there any bands that you could name who you think have kind of held up and kind of redeemed their reputation in terms of their philosophical worldview? Richard?
Oh, well, I thought I'd, like before answering that, so I'd object, but there is a whole other path that bands took as well, and not just the sort of paint-by-numbers Satanism that a lot of these bands start out with. But I think the fact that there was a whole sort of need to outdo each other and prove how deadly serious they were. And over the past about probably 15 years, there's been a large revival of bands who have gotten quite deeply into Satanism by adopting Christian symbolism, but and then inverting it in a very strong, and even getting into theology in a quite a deep way. And I think Mayhem set the precedent for that with the Mysterious Dom Satanas. But after that, you had bands like Offer Mode, Despel Amiga, Funeral Mist, Catharsis, and from that, like a ex-member of Offer Mode, he left and became a Roman Catholic. And then you get bands like Reverend Ibn Malakht, who are deeply theologically Roman Catholic while making music that sounds very much like the Mysterious Dom Satanas. So, I mean, you get the whole sort of occult bands like Acherontos, Aklis, and Nightbringer, and things like that. So it's like, while a lot of bands distance themselves from that sort of Satanism, a lot of bands doubled down and wanted to show how far they could take it. So they got more and more into occultism and took it to its logical conclusion.
Definitely, another
strand from that. However, to answer your question about bands that have definitely matured, I'm trying to think, because a lot of the earlier bands, some of them just seem to kind of look on their past with a bit of
disdain. I know, a
bit of a disdain and embarrassment. Whereas their earliest material was generally quite its best, because it tried to compensate for lack of ability with innovation, and that's what made it so beautiful and creative. Because they compensate for a lack of musical professionality.
Yeah, I still recall Enslaved saying that they think their worst album is Blood M, and for me that's one of the top three Enslaved albums of all time. So it's funny how bands have a very different view of their kind of past material. And of course, you know, Enslaved will never play. It's such a shame, because the early Enslaved records are some of my favorite black metal records of all time, but they never perform anything from them unless they're doing a dedicated kind of, retro full album performance show like they did recently at Grieghallen at Beyond the Gates in Norway. But you know, the last couple of times I've seen Enslaved, they only play songs from their more recent albums, which in my opinion are very dull. But yeah, that's just the way it is, unfortunately. But I think like it's probably time to move on. I'd like to just say a little bit about the kind of music of black metal. Someone in the chat has mentioned that the Wild Hunt with regards to black metal, and that's a great point. That's something that I wanted to raise here, and it's something that I've always thought of, is that the kind of 90s Norwegian black metal scene was so kind of atavistic, it was so visceral, that it was almost like a kind of modern day manifestation of the Wild Hunt or the Manabund. You know, this kind of like this the dark, violent kind of antisocial gang of young Northern European men who kind of separated themselves from society, you know, dispensed with all of the usual rules in terms of, you know, how to treat other human beings and how to make music, how to perform things. And they just did things completely on their own terms. And that's something really important to get across to those of you who have no interest in the music of black metal. This is one of the reasons why people like us are so passionate and fascinated by the genre. It's not just a form of music, but it's an expression of something very ancient, very, very European, very pagan, I would argue, very mystical, very just generally very powerful. You know, when you begin to kind of appreciate and understand the music, then it's, you know, if you listen to the and maybe Whityard can give us the translation of it, but the opening lines of the album Shadow Throne by Satyricon, what are they, Whityard? Do you remember what they are?
Give me one second.
I'll keep talking while you find out, but yeah, because we discussed it recently, and the album opener is, yeah, go on.
Well, in the meantime, has Glamour answered the previous question about bands that have matured?
Oh no, sorry, may not have done. Glamour, are there any bands that you can think of that you admire who have stood the test of time, who haven't kind of cucked, as people say, on their views, or have maybe even kind of matured in their philosophical worldviews?
I mean, that was actually a very hard question. I actually had to stand up and actually scroll through my record collection just to think of somebody. But I think the one band that comes to mind straight away is, that came to mind is Satanic Warmaster. Because when you compare them to the very early days, when it was all very raw, primitive, and even though the first like couple of Satanic Warm albums are like, you know, classics, when you compare them to how they are now, with the Thimblewinter album especially, you know, absolutely worlds apart. You know, so yeah, definitely Satanic Warm. They've definitely stood the test of time. They've really stuck to their ground, stuck to their morals, and like, you know, held their integrity.
Yeah, even though it's still called Satanic Warmaster, which is quite a kind of, you know, and I don't think that Satanic Werewolf Tyrant would ever denounce Satanism. I believe that he still declares himself a Satanist to this day.
But
it's very much that kind of Nietzschean form of Satanism. It's not kind of like international banker Satanism of like ritual abuse of children and stuff like that, or degenerate acts. You know, I think he's I don't know too much about him, but in other manners, you're right, in his kind of more socio-political worldview, he's definitely not cucked in any way. He's maintained and he's gone head to head with lots of the kind of people who tried to police the scene, people like Kim Kelly, who I used to know somewhat because we both worked for Terrorizer magazine at the same time, just very briefly. She was quite a nice girl at the time, but she developed into a full-blown communist, and yeah, the less said about that the better. But
yeah, I've heard about her. I've never met her. I'm glad.
she was pleasant at the time, but yeah, I mean, there's no way that she and I could have a civil conversation these days. But yeah, anyway, go on.
No, there's a band Hugo had mentioned about bands that regress, and a band that comes to mind straight away is a Czech band called Inferno. Do you know them?
I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, they were like full-blown pagan black metal. Then they suddenly, literally overnight, just suddenly became a satanic occult band. And like,
Maybe because that's where the money is, unfortunately. You know,
yeah, yeah. I was just about to say, because they signed to Gurnia Records, I think it was. Mm. I mean, I saw them live back in 2015. They had all the cliches, you know, candles and hoods and, you know, all the rest of it. And then, like, a friend of mine who's been seeing them live, well, for the last, like, 10 years prior to that, I said to me, yeah, it's just like completely different. Yeah, they were actually, like, you know, attending blots and stuff like that. And like you said, it was around the time when the whole sort of boom of trendy cottism kicked in, and they sort of jumped on that bandwagon, unfortunately.
Do you by any chance have that, you know, I was talking about the album Shadow Thrown by Satyricon, which actually happens to be my favorite black metal album of all time, and the way that that album opens is just with the raw kind of in your face spat vocals of Satyr. And I think he says something like, it is now time for the death of the White Christ or something like that. Which Yeah,
it's a Kampen mot God och byta Christer I gang, which is the struggle against God and White Christ is underway.
Yeah. Brilliant. And like the way that that's delivered, I mean, it sends chills down my spine every time I hear it, and it sets the tone for the album. And I think it's a very pagan sounding album. One of the bands that I featured in my pagan music episode was Storm, the side project of Satyr and Fenris from Darkthrone, which is kind of like a cross between folk rock and Norwegian black metal. And it uses a lot of Norwegian folk melodies, traditional folk melodies, but done in a more kind of abrasive, you know, semi-black metal way. And it's one of my favorite albums. And, you know, one of the things that, and this is definitely something that I wanted to mention in this episode, is that they declared on that album, they called their music a Norse national romantic music. And this is something that I took for my, and made a t-shirt for my dark folk project, Walkensman, because national romanticism is something that I would, is a whole kind of philosophy which I would very much ascribe to black metal. You know, forget Satanism, it is national romanticism in musical form. And even though, that's to me how I describe it. It's a glorification and a celebration of the landscapes, the history, the pagan past, the folklore of Scandinavia, you know, for the Norwegian bands of Norway. And obviously bands from Eastern Europe did the same for their you know, respective countries. There, I would say that my old band Winterfilleth are an example of a band that has done that for England, essential national romanticism, you know. And even though people accuse Winterfilleth of being Nazis, which is utter bullshit, it's just a celebration of English culture and heritage, which apparently is not allowed. You know, you can celebrate anything else, but not that. National romanticism, that's what black metal, that's really gets to the heart of the philosophy and the spirit of black metal, I would say. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it's because obviously that is, you know, the biggest part of you. You know, that is in your veins, that is your roots. And yeah, so like when you're getting into the real dark spirituality of any source, that's basically what it's all to come down to eventually. You know, so yeah, definitely.
Cool.
I'd say that black metal is very much a Wagnerian style of music. It's very nationalistic, very romantic, and it connects a people to its landscape. It's not just nationalistic, as in it's the people in a vacuum. It's a people that's very much bound to their landscape, their history, as a sense of who they are. And you really see that sort of shaping the sound of what you're listening to. There's a very sort of, like, different bands seem to have really identifiable sounds. Like, you can really hear a Norwegian black metal band compared with an English one, compared with a Finnish one, compared with a French one, and a Swedish as well. It's like all different black metal bands tend to have their distinctive type of who they are. But unfortunately, you don't get that a lot with American But then again, that's America for you. But we have a lot of European bands. They tend to reflect their own national landscape, and they do it unconsciously as well. Like you can spot a Finnish band a mile off, and it's not like they're aiming to have a particular sound. They just do it organically and naturally. So yeah. There's something very sort of subconscious that really emanates in black metal, but seems to carry a distinct sense of identity. Each national sound quite unique.
Yeah, and this is what happens when you let young people off a leash, isn't it? You know, when you let creative, genius young minds off of a leash, then they create something like black metal. And you know, Whityard and Glomor and myself were discussing earlier in a chat that you know, when I was introduced to black metal, you know, and I'm just going to talk about the kind of musical aspect of it for a moment rather than the philosophical, it was introduced to me as the modern heir to classical music. And you know, you stick on a black metal record, and if you're unfamiliar with it, you'll think that that's a load of rubbish. You'll think that that's a nonsensical statement because it's this abrasive kind of poorly produced kind of cacophony. But that's kind of part of it. It's the ability to create a cacophony with just a few instruments, but then to bring it down to just, you know, a classical guitar playing a very atmospheric folkish melody, and then some kind of synth pads in the background, and then you know this kind of dynamism that you see in black metal music is very reminiscent of what you see in classical music, and that's another reason that it can rightly be called national romanticism.
Yeah, totally on board with you on that one. Absolutely. Cool.
So I just like the kind of last subject I wanted to talk to, other than talk a little bit about Pale Mist, is these days, you know, one of the things that we could and try not to complain about too much, but we could complain about, is the kind of rise of red and anarchist black metal bands. So over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I to be honest, I don't know kind of where the legacy goes back of this, but I would say the most prominent example is a band called Dawn Raid, who are regrettably and shamefully from England. And this is a band who, as far as I know, sort of 6 or 7 years ago were playing screamo music or something like that, and then turned their hand to what they claim to be black metal. I've tried listening to it. The music is rubbish, and there is none of the atmosphere or spirit that black metal should have in it, not in the music, not in the imagery, and I imagine not in the lyrics, you know, because they spend half of their live shows calling for people to kill cops and things like that, you know, basically making kind of radical pseudo anarchist declarations. So, you know, there are a few bands who've kind of followed their lead, you know, and I think that these are mostly tourists who've kind of entered the scene. They've kind of come in from other scenes. You know, I don't know how they've discovered it. I always, you know, and I know some people don't like me saying this, but the first time I saw these kinds of people coming into black metal was when with the record label Southern Lord, when they started with bands like Wolves in the Throne Room and things like that, the American label. Unfortunately, I know that there are probably some Americans listening to this who might be black metal fans, and absolutely nothing against you, but for the most part, Americans have... Americans should not really have been allowed to play with black metal, because there's been this huge influx of this kind of, you know, they seem to think that it should by rights be this kind of anti-fascist liberal, whatever, you know, you know what I'm talking about. But this has kind of come in, and just wanted to talk a little bit about this. And, you know, Whityard, do you see any kind of threat in this? Like, how much does this bother you, if at all? You know, is this like, is this a passing phase? Is it something that we should be on our guard about, those of us who are, you know, protective over the genre? Or does it just not matter because we'll always have the classic records?
I do think it's the genuine problem. interestingly, the development of black metal as a whole seems to run completely parallel to the geopolitical and cultural zeitgeist. So you can you can see that black metal runs concurrent with where things are going politically in the world. And as there's been a as things have gone very rapidly towards radical leftism, towards the sort of normalization of anarchism and the general deconstruction of Western values, of European values and culture, of a social order. As these things have been deconstructed and paved the way for the current degenerate state of the world, black metal has followed exactly that same path. It's no longer a counter movement, because essentially, while modern leftism considers itself to be countercultural, it's stepping in the shoes of black metal and believes itself to be the counterculture, and it's not, and it never was. And you have all these, as you said, tourists who have come out of the hardcore genre, the sludge and punk genre,
grindcore,
and the start of that seemed to be at least about a decade and a half, if not more, old. In fact, they're probably going back to the 90s in some areas. Just the growth of irony culture. And while black metal can be a bit, as Dave Martell calls, schlocky, it can be quite a cliche in various areas, but at the same time, it's absolutely beautiful for all the reasons we've discussed over this podcast so far. And because of that, it deserves some degree of respect and appreciation for the traditions that have brought it to where it is now. And unfortunately, because it's treated with as just another form of music, it just gets ridiculed, it gets mocked, and it gets treated with irony, because they see things of bands like Immortal and consider it to be goofy and silly, and then they'll make parody bands out of it. And that sort of deconstruction and the parody and irony culture has led to where we are now with the tourists jumping on board. It's kind of it's taken away the internal integrity that black metal has, and made it palatable for outsiders to have a look in, because for the first time they're no longer excluded from the genre. It's not this this beautiful romantic thing, and even when it is, it becomes commodified and packaged for a lot of these people. So they'll see things like bands like Paysage Diva, Iljan, and even overlookingly, they'll make excuses for Burzum by going, "Oh, I love the music of Burzum, but I don't like his sketchy beliefs." So they'll always try to make excuses of where they become, "I love black metal," but in which case they'll try to reshape it and redesign it on their own terms. They'll try to make it something of their own. So they'll infiltrate the genre and become these sort of reluctant outsiders. And then all of a sudden, they seem to step into its shoes, and then they try to redesign it and reshape it in their own image. And then all of a sudden, those who were the originators of the genre, those who kept true to its traditions, are now those on the outside who are made to feel excluded, guilty, and ashamed for upholding something that was theirs to begin with.
Yeah, I remember when I first was introduced to black metal in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, and the guys that introduced me to it, who were a little bit older than me, were guys who had, you know, long hair down to their backside. They wore combat boots up to their knees, you know, black army trousers, you know, religiously. They didn't wear anything else. That they did look the part. You know, they wore exclusively black metal shirts, you know. And I remember going to my first kind of like gigs and things in the late 90s and feeling very, very unwelcome, because I'd kind of come from, you know, I'd come from the kind of punk and hardcore scene. And, you know, even though I'd been listening to black metal for several years by the time I went to see my first show, I was one of the only guys there who didn't have long hair and wasn't wearing kind of the uniform. And I was literally sneered at. And at the time, it felt quite intimidating, but I've never once thought that those guys were unreasonable. I've always recognized that this is one of the things that makes black metal what it is, that this elitism is one of the things that makes it so great. Unfortunately, what seemed to happen in labels like Southern Lord and lots of Americans discovering it, they weren't met with that barrier, you know, because they came to it fresh. They were all of a sudden, they had this whole scene open up to them. And by the way, you know, the guys that I mixed with, you know, that they didn't laugh at Immortal videos at all. You know, there was no, like, it was deadly serious, you know. And you can kind of like question that now and say, oh, we were just being youthful and naive and things like that. But we took it seriously, like, especially the guys that introduced me to it took it seriously back then. Whereas I can imagine now anyone who gets into black metal they get into it on the basis that it is kind of this joke, and that you just kind of have to live with the fact that it's a joke and just kind of try and make something a little bit more credible, in inverted commas, by not wearing, you know, by not having long hair or wearing spiked wristbands or whatever, you know. And so it's kind of, basically, it became too liberal. It became too open for any and all. And that opened the way for lots of kind of very ill-fitting views and people to come into black metal and then try and claim it as their own. So yeah, I agree entirely with what you're saying there. But Glomor, what do you think? Like, do you think that there's any real threat to this kind of new wave of red and anarchist anti-fascist black metal bands that are trying to kind of revise what black metal should be about? Is it a passing fad? Is it something we should laugh at? I think it is. I mean, generally I laugh at these people, especially because their music is always shit. And I'm not just saying that because of their views, but their music is always shit.
The music is uninspired. That's why it's so bad.
Completely.
Without sounding too pretentious, because they haven't had the same sort of introduction and sort of path that we've brought in the world of black metal, they're not going to have that same essence or aesthetics. That's why it's just so bland, you know. So, but do I think it's a threat? Well, yes and no, because at the same time, there's more of a chance now that your gig might be cancelled or whatever, or, you know, Antifa might infiltrate your gig and smash everything up. But at the same time, that sort of makes it, I suppose, being a part of the black metal scene more dangerous, you know, as it should be. It was never going to be an easy ride at all. I mean, back in 2016, Pale Mist played with Standable Master, right? And that gig was all over the media, some racist Nazi gig. You know, the venue had to cancel. They got a new venue. It was kept in secret. You know, it was like announced the day before where the venue is and all the rest of it. And the gig was a huge success, and it actually felt like a real black metal gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, it was a great. I was at that show. That was brilliant.
Yeah, so this is what I mean. So really, I think the problem I've got is now it's just like, you know, it's just a question of who I'm working with and who's listening to my music, and like, it's just like because you know, because like I said, it was with Sovereign Law, they sort of made it like, you know, a black metal, a safe space for the hardcore kids, for example. Because, like, yeah, back in like the mid 2000s, I knew plenty of people who liked black metal, but they would never in a million years go to a black metal concert for sort of same reasons what you said before you really got into it yourself. But I mean, it's just got to the point where you would just see, like, you know, black metal festivals abroad, like the really elite ones, and like you'd just be surrounded by, you know, really elite, intolerant black metal thing. But nowadays, back in like sort of mid-2010s, you sort of saw the hard rockers come in, sort of saw the punks come in, and then the atmosphere just got a bit more weird. And so I suppose it sort of ruined that essence of that part of it, because it just, you know, it didn't feel like I was entering the same sort of zone I was entering before. Especially now, I mean, like even a few months back, just to test the waters, I traveled to London to attend a concert. It was the Ruins of Bathurst, just to see if my motivation and enthusiasm is still there. And it wasn't so much the fact that it was, you know, full of like non-black metal guys, just people like wearing masks, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's so...
But this is something we haven't even touched on. So I'm sorry, carry on. I'll bring this in a moment.
Yeah, so just, you know, and this is what I mean. It just feels like, you know, for me now to be fully satisfied, it would feel like if I was to record a bit of music, I want to literally individually pass it out to my mates and not release it like on hundreds of copies around the world, because I know it's just going to fall into the hands of the wrong people. And if I wanted to put on a gig, it would literally be like an invite-only gig. So... Yeah.
I can understand that. Yeah.
So I mean, like, it's just sort of what I think. The thing about this whole how black metal's got soft, it's made me be further away from the modern scene, but it's made me appreciate the past more. So this is why I keep obsessively, especially the last couple of years, really catching up on all like the early gems of the Norwegians and the Poles and whoever else from the early 90s or the 80s that I've missed out on. Earlier on in the year, I was in Oslo when I popped into Nesbød Records. I don't know how you pronounce Nesbød, where it is. I was just surrounded by all these, like, I don't know if you've been there, but all these black metal demos, original pet demos, and it just sort of reminded me that, yeah, I just need to delve deep into the past. And just sort of being in, like, you know, the basement of the black metal graffiti, and then, you know, going to Euronymous's grave and just going pulling around bits of Oslo where certain photo shoots and stuff, and where certain churches were burnt and stuff like that. Sort of like, you know, reignited my interest and passion, and it sort of reminded me what it was that got me into black metal in the first place. So yeah, it's just, I suppose it's just made me like sort of less and less enthusiastic about, you know, making black metal now, or, you know, being in bands now and playing gigs now. So yeah.
And I think like the thing that's far more not like worrying, but perhaps insulting to me now than these kind of red and anarchist black metal bands, who I really don't give a shit about, because their music's not going to stand the test of time. It's not going to be declared classic black metal in 20 years' time. What does piss me off is the number of black metal bands who have bent the knee to the COVID agenda, I'm not going to name specific bands because it's hearsay and I don't know for sure, but there are bands who, you know, you would be shocked to hear have took the prick just so that they could tour, you know, bands who are meant to be the very epitome of kind of, like satanic wolves. And this is why I don't know if I coined the term, but it's a term I like to use a lot these days, sheep in wolves clothing. Because that's what all these bands are, you know. They dress up like these kind of otherworldly warriors, you know, ready to fight the entire kind of Judeo-Christian system. And yet, you know, you'll catch many of them wearing masks. Most of them have got jabbed up so that they can tour and go to festivals and whatnot. And many of them virtue signal about all this kind of thing on social media as well. And to me, this is an absolute joke.
It was a huge black pill. I mean, if there's any like final nail in the coffin, it was that. You know, it's like that just sort of told me that black metal. I've said it a lot of times in the Pelmist Telegram. Just black metal has expired. Okay, I mean, it's never going to have the sort of same essence and whatnot as it used to, because like even if you do end up in a concert where we're talking about, where there is no hardcore gears and it's just a fully black metalers, you're saying to yourself, right, how many people in here are jabbed? You know, and yeah, how many, what bands am I listening to bend the knee to the prick just so they can play live and tour? And it's just sort of like, you know, really dampens your motivation. So yeah, that's just furthermore why my motivation in black metal in the current age are just gone.
Yeah. So let's get onto that in a minute. But Whityard, like, you know, how do you feel about that? I mean, yeah, for myself, I agree with Glomor there. It's sapped any kind of interest in being part of the current scene out of me. If there's like a small section of the scene that's like maybe 3% of black metal fans who are still standing against this shit, like we three are, and I know that many of the listeners here are, then yeah, count me in. I'm part of that. But the wider black metal scene, no, it's a joke. I've got no interest in that, and I've got nothing in common with those who have complied with all of the COVID bullshit. No matter how big their black metal record collection is or how wide their knowledge is, they have demonstrated that they clearly don't really understand the true spirit of it. So yeah, how do you feel about it?
I'd agree. I've had quite an involvement in the scene of both black and death metal, both in performing in bands, doing various artwork and logos for bands here and there. So I've been quite prolific in my involvement in things, but I've stepped out of the scene long before 2020. So I was kind of a bit of a outsider at that point, but outsider looking in. But what I saw of it, it was the final nail in the coffin. It was the, it really exposed exactly who is a charlatan in the scene, which was almost everyone. Because a lot of these people, they consider this to be a very politically neutral issue. And I think that's part of the problem. A lot of bands don't want to be political, but because of the powers that be have shaped these events as being non-partisan. People have fallen for it because they... and in fact, if you stand against it, you get painted as being political. But getting the prick and complying with masks and everything else is considered to be neutral, and that's part of the propaganda of this. So I think seeing how everyone reacted in 2020, and not just the events with COVID, but all the events surrounding the Great Reset, whether that's the whole black square in their profile, George Floyd virtue signaling, whether it's in the I Stand With Ukraine virtue signaling. It's been every single current thing over the past couple of years that have all played a part in the general Great Reset propaganda. Pretty much most bands have, if they weren't overtly virtue signaling about it, people like Nurgle from Behemoth, as a prime example of just sheer dickheadery. Mortis as well, he formerly of Emperor, he showed his true colors as well when he was advising people to get their jab. And this is the same person who only months earlier was complaining about cancel culture and woke culture. So it's like they'll happily try to I think it was weird, it was when Emperor were playing and they had Faust back on drums, and people were complaining because Faust killed a gay guy, and so he decided to fight back against people by saying fuck your cancel culture, and that's about as edgy as he gets, because only a few months later he'd go full on into telling people to get their jabs. So all people from bands all just swallowed the narrative hook, line and sinker, and all the surrounding events around it. So there was no way to step outside of the sort of the non-partisan force of the entire thing.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, you know, we don't expect black metal musicians to be like politically clued up to know about the machinations of the deep state and stuff like this. But you know, virtue signaling about your like, you know, your COVID stance, it is political in itself, whether you like it or not. And also, I would say that those guys from the 90s who were part of that very kind of like virile scene, they would have instinctively known that, you know, just on a purely instinctual basis, they would have seen normie Christians wearing masks and would have automatically flouted that to the greatest kind of most extreme extent possible, you know. So like they didn't need to have a knowledge of what was really going on, just as no one, any, you know, who really understands the spirit of black metal now would need to have a knowledge of what's really going on. But just, you know, that's one of the beauties of it, is that it is a kind of automatic rejection of social norms. But in a, and obviously that's a double-edged sword, because that can lead to certain degenerate acts and things like that. But that's the kind of gateway that black metal opened up. It allowed people to just be antisocial, to be rebels. And that's kind of the first step towards finding sanity outside of the system. So, yeah, I do agree with you. But I just think that, like, you don't even need to be political, or certainly at one point in time, you wouldn't have even needed to be political to just have a healthy instinct to know that the COVID stuff is bullshit.
Yeah, it shows exactly just how insidious it is, that it's poisoned every facet of every part of society, to the point in which literally everything is political, and mm-hmm. it's unavoidable.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot that could be said about that. Glomo, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit, because, you know, we've kind of planned for a while to do a little stream about Pale Mist and your kind of philosophies and what's going on. Pale Mist is a great underground band by Glomo that he's cultivated over the years, and there are some interesting kind of philosophies behind it, you know, and some of them I'm not really kind of fully aware of. So I just wanted to ask you, you know, about, you know, well, firstly, like, where did Pale Mist begin? What was the origin of it? Why did you start it? What was the kind of philosophy behind Pale Mist to begin with?
Well, I mean, funny enough, I started it because I couldn't find the right people to work with. Back when I was in my late teens, I mean, I've been in a couple of bands by that point. As a drummer. I basically fell out with this band I was jamming with at the time, and got removed. And that just sort of like bit me, thought, fuck it, I'm just going to go on my own. So, I mean, I had very, very limited guitar skills and very, very primitive recording equipment, but I just jumped in. So that's when the first demo was recorded 15 years ago in winter 2007. That was the demo Hate Wound, which I released myself 6 months later, because I just wanted to do things my own way, because, like, you know, bands were not working out for me at that point.
Yeah.
So that's basically how it started. So I just basically wanted my own baby, essentially, you know.
That's a common path in black metal. I think that's why we've ended up with so many one-man bands, because, you know, the type of person who generally historically has got into black metal is the kind of person who doesn't like to compromise, doesn't like to kind of play by other people's standards, and just wants to do things their own kind of way, no matter how extreme or, you know, wrong in inverted commas it might be, you know, because we want to try and recreate that magic. And if we feel that we're in a band with other people that aren't able to recreate that magic that we find in black metal, then we go off and do it ourselves. Is that how you kind of found it?
100%. And, you know, it was the best decision. I mean, like, looking back, the people that I was actually in bands with have turned out to be, you know, the sort of people we're talking against out of cancel culture, Antifa types, you know, so yeah. Good move. Because I'll still be stuck there. Well, I would have left eventually, but yeah.
Good riddance, so,
it's hilarious. I mean, like, I can remember, because, like, it's hilarious because, like, I can remember one of the guys I used to be in the bands with back in the day got me into Satanic Warmaster. And then, like, when I actually went to support Satanic Warmaster, he like had a bit of a problem with it. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
it's swings and roundabouts. So, I'm glad I made that move. I mean, it was a slow process, but I had no rush. I just literally wanted to just sort of like set the walls free, so to speak, and just,
Just on a slight anecdote there, I think what you described there about that guy who introduced you to Satanic Warmaster and then deemed them verboten years later, that's also pretty common, because you get these people who get into black metal in their kind of younger years. And I know a few examples of this that I won't name. And, you know, they kind of start going off the kind of extreme end of things. And then, a few years later, they've obviously kind of chickened out. They've got to kind of a point where they've thought, nah, this is too kind of radical for me. I'm going to kind of wind it back in. And obviously also the Overton window has shifted, so that the views they held 10 years ago are now no longer acceptable. And, you know, they've moved with the window, and they're going to now chastise you for listening to bands that they used to listen to. You know, it's incredible.
Absolutely. I mean, you'll be surprised how quick their views change. This is the scary thing. I mean, you can just see how unauthentic this is. I mean, like, these, like, said groups of friends I had back then, I mean, I'm not joking, like, overnight, you know? I mean, like, literally, I'll be talking to them in the pub 1 week about some quite controversial topic, and then, like, literally the week later in the pub, completely changed, you know? Like I'm still talking to the same person here, you know? It's just like, and you sort of see the emotions, like, in the looks in their face, just, you know, they're forcing themselves to sort of say this trope, you know what I mean?
But I mean, like, good
riddance at the end of the day. I mean, like, this is what happens. This is what happens when you stick to your own guns, right? They go one way, and then you keep going your way, and eventually you land in with the group of people that you want. I mean, that's obvious. You already knew that, but still, I mean, it's a very good example of that, really.
Yeah, and it always pays off. It really does. You know, sticking to your guns, holding on to your convictions, you'll always end up with, and this goes for anything, not just black metal or music in general, but in anything, be yourself and you will find yourself among people who you feel comfortable around, who you share views with, and that will make you infinitely happier than if you had tried to tone down your views to fit in with old friends. You know, I've always been a big proponent of shedding old friends if they're holding you back, whether that be philosophically or musically or in terms of your health and fitness, whatever, you know. So yeah, definitely. But anyway, it's a bit of a tangent because we're meant to be talking about Pale Mist, but what are the kind of philosophical subject matter that you have drawn on for your, you know, either the lyrics or the imagery or whatever for Pale Mist? What are the kind of things that you explored in order to build Pale Mist into the force it is?
I'd say the simple, to put it into one word, I'd just say simply it's transcendence. I mean, it's just basically keep going above and beyond, stepping outside yourself and just in general growing. I mean, you can see on the just looking at the artworks of the three albums, you can just that the all deal with that sort of concept. It's just basically about, you know, getting uncomfortable, stepping into the dark, being dangerous and fighting. Yeah, just fighting the mundane, the modern world in general, and just basically being like your own beast on your own path type thing. I mean, as you can probably tell, like it's a very personal thing, which is why it's a one-man project. I've never got anyone involved. Okay, I mean, I've got guests involved in the past, like you yourself, but it's always predominantly just been me, my visions, my work, and no one telling me how I should write things or do things.
Yeah, too right. Yeah. And like, I know that, you know, you've announced recently that Pale Mist and your kind of involvement with black metal is coming to an end. And, you know, I think we can all kind of gather that is partly related to some of the, you know, the topics we've been discussing in this podcast. But is there anything you want to expand on there? You know, why at this point do you feel happy kind of, you know, putting it behind you? You know, do you feel you've achieved everything that you can with Pale Mist and your other projects? Or, you know, is there something a bit more kind of dramatic to it?
It's definitely dramatic. I mean, like, I will be honest. I mean, like, the thought of just starting fresh with Pale Mist is nothing new. I've been thinking about that. Every time I release something new, I always say to myself, is this going to be the last one? I always ponder on it for a bit, and eventually I don't. But, so, I mean, like, the last album, that was released last year, so I already was starting to get plans to write more and possibly do some gigs. But no, I mean, like I said, I think with the events for the last couple of years were the final nail in the coffin for me, and I just wasn't getting enthusiastic to continue with the project with where it was. Yeah. I'm really, really proud of the last album. I think that was a great way to end it. So I feel that now, there's nothing more to express with it. I just think it's been undone. It's served its purpose, and you know, I will continue making music, of course, but Pale Mist, I mean, it's like with any sort of like project you've had since you were a teenager, you feel like, I'm in my mid 30s now, so it just all gets to the point where you feel like, yeah, it's had its time. Let's just start new ideas, new effort in, and album wasn't upwards really.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, completely understand. Richard, like, you know, you have some background in making black metal. Have you got any kind of desire to get back into that, to do anything more on that, and if not, why not?
Well, I still write black metal riffs, but I think there's the awareness of what you make always has an audience, and anything I make and record will go out into the public arena to be listened to, which of course is what it should be. But once that happens, you then automatically take on the role of engaging in the public space, and it's very difficult to do that and not have to engage in the public space and take part in the scene. And I know it's impossible to do that and just not have any involvement, but I think personally I just want to make other kinds of music these days. I'd rather make
folk and ambient music instead, I can still have that same feeling that I get from black metal with the atmosphere, but not have to engage in the metal scene. But on the other hand, there's the there's also the issue, which I've just thought of, which is that if we don't take part in the scene and take it back for ourselves, then essentially these people who are subverting it...
We're seeding ground, yeah.
Yeah, that they'll be the ones in control. So on the other hand, there's a almost a duty to take back control of the scene that we still hold the traditions for it. We still believe in what it once stood for in its earliest incarnation, and we still hold those values for it quite sacred in a way. So
that's my mentality entirely. And you know, it's funny, a time when lots of people from kind of my generation, people who've been into the music, into black metal for a long time, are kind of moving on, so to speak, whether it be because their tastes and preferences or interests have changed, or because they feel that they have done enough with black metal, whatever. I'm kind of going in the opposite direction. You know, like, I know, you know, people will be familiar that I have my dark folk kind of project, heathen folk project, Walkensman, which has been going since, sort of informally since about 2010, 2011. But now I'm kind of turning my hand back towards black metal. I'm involved with two projects newly, and that's the whole point. I mean, I'm only getting involved with projects now with people who share broadly our views, particularly on the COVID stuff. You know, I don't need to be involved with political people, but I need people who have a good instinct, at least, for that sort of bullshit. And I want to make black metal great again, to use like a cliche. You know, I want it to be what it once was. I want there to be new records coming out. And if other bands aren't going to do that, then I'll have a crack at it myself. So I've been focusing over the last kind of year or two on writing some new black metal, and both in terms of the music and in terms of the attitude behind it and the kind of artwork and things, it's going to be very much in the vein of what bands were doing and thinking in the 90s, as opposed to the modern kind of homo black metal that you get. I don't think we should cede that ground. But is there anything else that either of you wanted to kind of get off your chest? You know, I know that you probably had some kind of particular points you wanted to make in this discussion, and hopefully you feel like you made them. But is there anything else that either of you wanted to discuss before we do the riddle section?
Well, there was a point earlier, just on the previous topic, that I know was brought up in the comments. Just that it's quite ironic that we have to rely on bands like Roy Said Fred, Eric Clapton, and Van Morrison to lead some sort of moral high ground against COVID and act as a genuine dissident, while you get black metal bands who are constantly screeching about some sort of war against Christianity and things like that have just expose themselves as just being mindless NPCs. And it's quite ironic, but a lot of the Christians that these black metal bands hate have showed more integrity than themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great point. As I say, that's why I call them sheep in wolf's clothing. You know, you're right. I mean, they claim to be anti-Christian, and they mock the Christians for their piety and their meekness and their kind of, you know, their slavishness. And yet in this current age, they're displaying 10 times more of that than true Christians are showing.
Yeah, 100%. Completely agree.
Glomor, is there any final points you wanted to make, that anything that you wanted to get off your chest in this?
One thing I will say is that any sort of outsiders to black metal, if you want to sort of like, you know, if you can't connect to the music, that's fine. Or what I suggest you do if you want to know more about it, get hold of some compilations of early zines, like what's that zine that expert from the Satirical Net in
Slayer Mag?
Yes, that's Slayer Mag. Something like that. Well, it's never really cool. Compilation called the Skogan Zines. It compiles all the free issues. It's like a zine from the early 90s as well, from Switzerland. That's really, really good. All the classic bands are in there. So yeah, grab some of that, and you'll get a better insight. And yeah, make you more and more interested in it.
That's a good recommendation, actually. Yeah, I've got that that compilation. It's called Metallion, I think, the compilation of Slayer Mags. It's called Metallion after Metallion, who was the owner of the zine. And it's a huge, thick book, and it's a really nice hardback book with kind of foil, print on the cover. I think you can pick it up for about £30. It's quite inexpensive, and it's just rammed full of interviews, classic black metal interviews, and it's really enjoyable to read. Some really good photos and outtakes from interviews in there. So yeah, anyone who's got a kind of deeper interest in black metal, particularly Norwegian black metal, I'd highly recommend getting a copy of that book.
Also, I'd recommend the web scene, Swallowed in Black.
Yes, good call. Yeah.
Like, but not only are they a web scene who do various reviews and interviews with black metal bands, but they are they're a group who very much are opposed to the COVID agenda and the New World Order, and for that reason, they have my highest respect for being a good representative of what black metal should be doing.
Yeah, Gerald behind Swallowed in Black is a good bloke. He's very switched on. He knows exactly what's going on. And he's got a passion for metal like we have as well. The name of that book was Metallion, the compilation of Slayer Mag zines. So I highly recommend that. But and Swallowed in Black is the name of the online zine that Whitchyard just mentioned. And yeah, great guy behind that. Lots of really interesting interviews. I've been interviewed by him. I think, Glomo, you did an interview, didn't you?
Yeah. It was a very good interview, very in-depth. Yeah. He's really done his research.
Yeah. Right, great. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Whitchyard, those of you who listened to episode number 11 that I did with Whitchyard will recall that he very kindly read the riddle in Old English. So he's very kindly again offered to do the same for this one. So first I'll just give the answer to last week's riddle. Last episode was number 15. And the answer to that is apparently Badger is the most widely accepted solution. And that was quite a long one, actually. I just kind of, if I flick back to it, yeah. Whereas my neck is white, my head and sides are brown. I'm swift of movement and bear a battle weapon. It's kind of obviously hints towards a badger, though. Although apparently a case has also been made for porcupine and fox and hedgehog. But just on those first lines, the badger would seem to make sense to me. So, for this episode, which is number 16, we have riddle number 16, for those of you who are interested. So I'll let Whitchyard recite that in its true Old English form. Once he's done that, I will recite it in its modern English translation. Off you go, Whitchyard.
Oft it shall with way a winnen, and with wind a feochten, somod with them such a fremen, thonne each sake in ye weta, yorth an urthum feacht. Maybe se eithel fremde, each be om strong that ye winnes, if it still a werthe, it me thus to sell, he be a twitran thonne each, and met slatende, son of Luma, Willath, Othferian, that each Frithian shall, each him that forstonde, it mean steort tholath, and mech stithne with stanas morton, faster ye haven, freer hot each hearty.
Thank you very much. I tried to follow that and I picked out a few words, especially itch, I. Yeah, there's a few words I recognised in there. But yeah, I'll now read that in modern English, and it goes as follows. I must fight with the waves whipped up by the wind, contending alone with their force combined, when I dive to earth under the sea. My own country is unknown to me. If I can stay still, I'm strong in the fray. If not, their might is greater than mine. They'll break me in fragments and put me to flight, intending to plunder what I must protect. I can foil them if my fins are not frail, and the rocks hold firm against my force. You know my nature, now guess my name. What do you guys think that is? Do you like Whityard? If you know what the answer to that is, then don't answer. But Glomo, I don't know if you were listening in on that, but
I was sort of going through the comments, so very not.
Yeah, no worries. Like I'm just picking out fins are not frail, so I guess it's something aquatic related, and the rocks hold firm against my force.
Seaweed.
Yeah, maybe, but if it's talking about fins, then it's presumably either something fish-like or dolphin or shark-like, or maybe even a boat or something like that.
Yeah.
I must fight with the waves whipped up by the wind, contending alone with their force combined. Yeah. Well, anyway, I won't look ahead to the answer to that one. I'll reveal that in the next episode. But thank you very much, Whityard, for reading that in Old English. And thank you generally to both of you for this excellent conversation. I've been looking forward to doing this one for a while. And I know, we could honestly sit and talk about black metal for hours and hours on end. And hopefully we'll get a chance to do that soon in person, but because it's something that we're all passionate about. So I hope that those of you who stuck around for the whole of this episode have found it of interest, even if black metal isn't a particular passion or interest of yours. Thank you, Whityard. Thank you, Glomo. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll speak to you all in the next episode of The Fergan.